at least in this region, that was dealing with the prairie dog management plan. It went very well. It went pretty much the way that the RAC had recommended to the Wildlife Board, and I don't see any further need for discussion on it.
Okay. Good. All right. So you want to go ahead and give us a regional update?
Are we already down there? Well, we're just moving right along. All right. First of all, I wanted to touch on our Red Fleet treatment that we're working on, Trent has been working on in our aquatic section in the region. Right now we're going through a draft EA, and it'll be out released for its 30-day comment period here shortly. If any of you want to have a copy or an opportunity to comment on that EA, I need you to get a hold of Trina Hedrick here, and she'll make sure that you, if you give her your address, she'll get that to you. But her and her staff have been working really hard with treatment. These posters that you see behind us here are about that treatment and some of the things that they've worked on. They had an open house here last week, and we'll have another one, I think, once the EA is done and our management plan has been approved. Our management plan has to go to RDCC and get approved through there. Once we get all that taken care of, we plan on having another one, and we'll get everybody back together again, and hopefully you'll be able to come out. I know they've worked really hard on it. They've pulled together a committee that's made up of anglers from around the region and taken a lot of public input, and they've worked really hard on identifying species and what species they want to put in once they get it treated. And but the treatment is looking to take place about October the 6th. And if everything goes well, it's kind of a time-sensitive thing. And October was the best time for us to be able to get that done with water temperatures and then also with the time when they won't be using the water for drinking. And so they've put a lot of work into it. The next thing I wanted to touch on a little bit is habitat. And our habitat section is gearing up and constructing 14 guzzlers this year. Did you hear that? 14 water guzzlers there. I bet you're excited about that.
What are you going to use for water?
Yeah. A bunch are going out. There's the Book Cliffs, Daggett County, and Antrim. And we'll give you more specifics on that. As soon as we can get him. But we're pretty excited he's going to put more out. But you're right, hopefully we'll get some monsoonal moisture about July or something, and if these are already in place, hopefully they can catch some water. They're also working right now on food plots, and they'll be starting a lot of their habitat projects July 1st. I also wanted to touch on briefly, just to go over some stuff that the agency, the division, has done, and it's only made possible through our partners and through the conservation groups that we work with. We captured almost 1,500 big game animals this year. Through capture projects and capture efforts. And in those, there was 218 bighorn sheep that were captured, and some of them were on the Uinta Mountains, Flaming Gorge area. And these are others from other areas around the state, whether it's Nine Mile, the Newfoundlands, or Karpowitz, Kaparowitz. I'm sorry, it's just a slip. it was a lot of time, long time I spent saying Karpowitz. So, and then we did transplants on the Zion unit, the Newfoundlands in Nevada. Our mountain goats that were moving around, we transferred 15 animals from that. We captured 15 bison on the Book Cliffs and took blood and did disease testing on them. We captured and moved 237 pronghorn. We captured and collared and worked over 149 elk, which is no small feat, whether it's on the Wasatch, the Dutton, or our San Juan unit. And we worked on 604 deer this last year. Many of those were transplanted. Some were came from urban areas. We had 211 bountiful elk or deer that were split between Big Wash and Raft Rivers. And you know that Big Wash is in our region here, and so we're really excited about the work that was done this last year through working with our partners and our conservation groups. None of this would be possible without their efforts and the things that they've done with us. And so we're really excited about that. And that's just some of the work that's gone on in the region and around the state. That's about it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Tim Ignacio, the tribe representative on Iraq, with us today. So we need to go to our rapid response with Trina Hedrick.
Is that coming up?
Let's go. Otherwise, you have to restart the
computer. Looks like it is. Thank you so much for fitting us in. My name is Trina Hedrick. I'm the regional aquatics manager. Here and Richard is our AIS biologist, aquatic invasive species biologist. We really wanted to, before this document goes final, we wanted to come and talk with you, just give you a heads up about what is contained in the document, the process that we went through, just to get your comments and answer any questions you might have. So the purpose, as most of you know, Lake Powell has recently been classified as infested, and it's all throughout the lake now. We see all different life stages. Deer Creek is now suspect. I'll explain more about what that means here in the next couple of slides. But these are, you know, it's getting close to home, right? It's getting close to our regional waters, and we really needed to be a little bit more proactive. As you guys probably know, quagga and zebra mussels, they'll affect aquatic food webs, usually to the detriment of pelagic species, those open water fish, say like rainbow trout, lake trout, kokanee. They can increase costs associated with irrigation, drinking water withdrawals, and things like that in our reservoirs. Anything man-made can really up the cost for the maintenance there. And just be general nuisances to recreationalists. You've probably all seen what's otherwise a perfectly good beach, and the water level comes down, and it's just covered with quagga mussels or zebra mussels, and they die, and it stinks, and you can no longer recreate on that beach. So they're just a pain in the rear end, and we need to keep them out, but at some point we may have to contain them. So flaming gorge starvation, rapid response, and control plans are meant to provide proactive and timely response to a confirmed positive to try and contain that confirmed positive to that water and keep it from spreading. The great things about these documents, collaborative effort between agencies. We've met with the agencies and the entities involved that have an interest in each of these waters. We've identified management actions that need to be taken. Some things we can actually start working on ahead of time before a positive even happens to be better prepared. We think that this will guide us through a quick shift from prevention to that containment that I talked about and really help us through the initial decision making and just really expedite communication. And that's really what you want. It's all, a lot of times responding to something like this, multiple agencies and entities, the communication really needs to happen very quickly. And cooperators so far we started with Flaming Gorge and Starvation. We will also do one for Steinecker, Red Fleet, and Pelican Lake. For Flaming Gorge, we've cooperated with the Forest Service, the Bureau of Reclamation, Wyoming Game and Fish, obviously the Division of Wildlife, but all different sections that are involved, including law enforcement, Daggett County, Sweetwater County, and then, of course, there are concessionaires. Starvation, a lot similar, except, of course, we don't have Wyoming. But add in Department of Interior and then Central Utah Water Conservancy District. That is a drinking water source for the city of Duchesne. So I did want to go through the objectives. It's kind of a lot of information in the event of getting you guys back on your, you know, your normal scheduled RAP meeting. I'm not going to go through it in ton of detail, so feel free to ask questions or make notes. You can talk about it later, because I am going to kind of go through it quickly. Objective one, you want to verify. Obviously, we don't want to jump the gun. We don't want to react to something that maybe we don't need to react to, that it's a positive that we're never going to find again. Maybe it's a false positive. So it's all about identifying, getting the information that we need to go to that spot where if they saw an adult, that we can verify that within 48 hours, or getting another verification if it's through laboratory analysis. Objective two, it's just that communication. So we have a list that's been put together that includes all the technical personnel from the agencies in charge of the water bodies. Their duties, they're listed here, but we'll go through those more as we go through the presentation. The AIS coordinator notifies all of these members, and it, for any positive that comes back, the response team is notified. So we all have a heads up. But the AIS coordinator doesn't necessarily go to the director's office until we get a suspect or higher. And they work with the director and the wildlife board to be able to list that water body as affected, either suspect, detected, or infested. So that can happen very quickly. And then that also triggers the working with the UDWR outreach program to get the information disseminated to the public. And that notification list is housed within this regional office. Richard is in charge of updating that twice annually. It includes people's names, phone numbers, emails, and so people come and go. So you need to maintain that list so everyone is notified who needs to be notified. So level of detection, inconclusive is the only one that doesn't get immediate response up there at the very top. So that's confirmed. A muscle is confirmed by microscopy or PCR, so it's a Velager stage. But it's not confirmed by both, and it's a single sampling event. So everyone kind of knows that that happened, but maybe we don't have to do a response. After that, we go up to suspect. So if we get a single sampling event, but it's confirmed by microscopy and PCR, then that triggers that the internal and then also that media response. So that's what happened at Deer Creek. Detective positive, that's two consecutive sampling events, both. Microscopy and PCR, and then infested is what we have at Lake Powell. So we see life stages, multiple life stages of the mussel, and The next objective is to establish internal external communication system. Some of this stuff we can work on now. We have multiple agencies that all have media personnel that need to review press releases and such. So we talked about getting a generic press release together that all of the agencies involved can they can have their folks review, and so you know you get a positive and that can be released immediately. Maybe we're starting to do some signs. Obviously we do have some positives, so we can start putting together signs, maybe ordering some extras so we can get those out immediately. Some of the other things listed, brochures, web material, we would really need the specifics, and we're prepared to respond immediately and start putting that stuff together, but we'll have to wait for a positive, and hopefully it never comes, but it's good to be prepared. Objective four moves us to what's called the control plan. So objective four just sets up that leadership structure, and our AIS coordinator out of Salt Lake convenes the response team, facilitates decision-making process, and brings in additional people as needed. For example, Flaming Gorge, if it's a positive at Buckboard, then the concessionaire down at Cedar Springs may not need to be involved just yet. But so you can just kind of pick and choose who needs to be involved, and that's up to the AIS coordinator in Salt Lake. Objective five is organizing available resources, laws, permitting requirements, things like that. So we put together a list of places where we can apply for funding. We put together a list of laws that we have to comply with, such as Clean Water Act. If we're going to be decontaminating professionally, a number of boats, and that's a lot more water runoff, which could potentially have implications through Clean Water Act. So we need to be aware of all of those laws that we could violate, try and get permits ahead of time, things like that. So we can just basically just check them off the list if needed. Objective 6 is the one why we're really here, because I think this this impacts the public more than anything. The minimizing vectors and pathways, that's the two AIS coordinators for Flaming Gorge, Beth Baer in Wyoming, Jordan Nielsen here in our Salt Lake office. They're going to get together. They're going to look at how you can minimize vectors and pathways and minimize the risk for spreading it further. Monitoring movement of human activity, that HACCP is the Hazard Analysis Control Plan. And it's basically how the agencies involved will all do sampling out there, how we'll minimize the risk and not spread it to other waters. The temporary closure, I'd just like to remind everyone that these are extremely important waters for more than just recreation. Starvation is a drinking water source for the town of Duchesne, Flaming Gorge, obviously hydroelectric power, things like that. So these plans are bigger than just being able to go fishing. So we do reserve the right to temporarily close the reservoir to boaters, and we may have to do that. And we will do that for the shortest amount of time possible. A temporary closure officially is having to decontaminate every boat that comes off of a water, not necessarily a physical closure. So we have to at least get people clean, draining, drying. If they're not going to, say in the spring, they're not going to launch their boat anywhere else in the next 18 days, we can, on their honor, we just say, okay, we're going to put a sticker on with the date that you're leaving this water. If you're going to launch before then, you need a professional decontamination. We don't have to professionally decontaminate, but we do have to get them started on that process. And that's required of us. We have to be able to contact these people. So if we can't staff a water, there's possibility we'd have to do a temporary closure. Again, we would do it for the least amount of time possible, but once the control plan is implemented and we're past that temporary closure period, we kind of have an idea of what we're looking at. We may see a reduction in the boating season. We may see closing of ramps that do not have inspection stations outside of inspection hours, and prohibiting of shoreline launching from non-developed launch points. So, again, we, the Division of Wildlife, want to increase fishing opportunities, not take them away. We're very obviously aware of that, but we have to be also participants in this bigger picture. So that's really why we're here, because I think that's probably the most controversial point. I just want to make people aware of that. We will set up inspection and decontamination stations and get those functioning, and install signage letting people know that this is now a positive water and that you must clean, drain, and dry. After that, it's pretty simple. You know, we're going to, objective 7, it kind of seems like it's going backwards. We're going to immediately begin surveys to define extent. These all kind of happen together. Just because we have this order of 1 through 10 doesn't mean that, they're kind of all happening together, so it really will... it will be fluid, but we do need to verify the extent through whatever means necessary, scuba surveys, villager sampling, that kind of thing. Yes?
Going back to number 6, the spreading of mussels, is it possible for them to be spread through the rivers?
Yes.
Can they come up from Lake Powell, or do they only go down the river?
You know, I don't know what the likelihood that they're going to move upstream is going to be, but they're definitely moving downstream. They're seeing them move through the dam, and they're seeing them down below Glen Canyon. So downstream, absolutely. Upstream as possible. I think we've seen in slower flowing waters, we've seen mussels kind of moving their way up and like into one of our hatcheries, and I think that was New Zealand mud snail, where then they had to try and come up with these, I think they were electric barriers, weren't they, where they were trying to keep the mussel out. But that's slower flow. So in terms of the Colorado, I don't know. But it's possible. It would take a long time to make their way through, though.
Do they attach to fish?
Anything that's stationary.
Just stationary.
But there was a picture of them attached to a crayfish.
Yeah, they do attach to anything hard, semi-hard, so.
So, it can attach to a living creature.
And that's the only way they can travel upstream, is if they attach to something and that something moves upstream, whether it's a boat, particularly a boat or a watercraft. They themselves to have no method of propulsion, so.
Further questions? Okay. Eradication methods, Zequinox and EarthTech QZ are EPA-approved chemicals, but of course that depends on what's your affected area, then the cost of implementation of something like that. So we think that we can probably control that, and the VOR has used both of those chemicals to control mussels around their facilities, but eradication is probably, complete eradication is very unlikely, unless we can get to something very quickly after getting this positive. Objective 9, institute long-term monitoring, of course, and then evaluating the response. This is a living document, and we will review it. I think it said every 5 years is when we'll review it, but we'll be reviewing our response and making adjustments as needed. So that's my email, phone number, and Richard's email, phone number. Also, if you're interested in getting a copy of the Red Fleet's draft EA, write that down and contact me or give me a call, and I can make sure you get that. But any other questions about the rapid response?
This actually isn't about the rapid response, but I had a friend that went to Lake Powell a week before last, came back, and I asked him if he had to go through a cleaning station. He said no, which surprised me, but is that because, I mean, he come out of Bullfrog, he said, no, there's anything there. Is that because they're not that far up?
No, we had the Division of Wildlife started 3 technicians that week that I went down there. What was that, 2 weekends ago? And before that, frightening, right?
Yeah, well.
Randy, what they should do in those, if they're not done there, then we expect them to give us a call, and we'll make sure that it gets done before they go into any other waters after they've left the gorge. We've got the way to treat that, or at least visit with them. Yeah, Lake Powell. Yeah, did I say Gorge?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Lake Powell. I'm sorry.
Part of the problem that we've had with communications with Lake Powell is the National Park Service gets money for prevention. So their quagga program is for prevention.
They shouldn't get any more money because it didn't work.
So, that we have had to increase our presence down there. Our southeastern region is going to be interviewing a couple of AIS biologists, and one of them will be stationed at Bullfrog. We're going to get an AIS biologist at Wellweek. We're going to have technicians stationed down there. But as you know, Lake Powell is very large lake. But we've documented them up to Bullfrog and probably even
just
higher.
A few. They haven't traveled too much upstream, but they're there. And we did hire additional 30 technicians just for Lake Powell. And even with that, we cannot check everybody. And so that's up to the other reservoirs, the technicians, our personnel to check them before they go in. So we're trying to cover both ends to make sure we don't spread it.
Any other questions by the RAC? This is informational, so we will move on. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. We have a presentation on the conservation and sportsman permits on Rule 657-41 by Justin Shannon.
Good evening, my name is Justin Shannon, and tonight I'm going to present a rule change to our 657-41, the Conservation and Sportsman Permit Rule. To begin, this rule adds clarity and consistency to both the Division of Wildlife and State Parks for mule deer and bighorn sheep permits that are good for Antelope Island. And what it does is it defines a special Antelope Island State Park limited entry permit. It categorizes the mule deer permits available on the island as premium limited entry, and then the bighorn sheep permits as once in a lifetime. And through this rule change, permits and season dates will be approved by the Wildlife Board and held in a general drawing. The other thing this rule change does is it provides a framework for the division and state parks to enter into a cooperative agreement or a memorandum of understanding. And the purpose of this MOU is to establish season dates and the number of mule deer and bighorn sheep permits that would be issued on the island. In addition to that, it would establish hunting procedures and regulations, protocols for issuing permits, and then conducting hunts for antlerless deer if we ever go down that road. And then finally, procedures and conditions for transferring revenue derived from these permits to Antelope Island. One of the take-home messages here is that DWR and state parks will coordinate annually regarding the limited entry permits that are valid for Antelope Island State Park. Another part of the rule change that's independent of Antelope Island is looking at requirements for conservation organizations that participate in the conservation permit program. And the first requirement would be they'd have to be a nonprofit chartered organization or a 501c3 and promote the protection and preservation of one or more conservation permit species. So for instance, if there was a conservation organization that was for the preservation and protection of frogs, they wouldn't necessarily be included in this program because the permits that are valid for conservation, the conservation permits are big game and turkeys and that type of stuff. So currently no organizations in the conservation permit program are affected by this change. And that's it for the rule change. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions by the RAC?
Yeah, I'll wait for the question.
Okay.
So Justin, I understand what you presented. I appreciate that. Is there going to basically be kind of a trend towards increased permits on Antelope Island for deer and bighorn sheep with this change, or no?
Not necessarily. It's just if there ever was an increase, uh-huh. that this just kind of lays the sideboards right. for the division and state parks to coordinate that. But I don't necessarily see that.
You don't see that down the road.
Yeah. Not in the conversations I've been in. No.
I see. Thanks.
Any other questions by the RAC? One point of rule and order in our meeting, I said at the beginning of the meeting, for any of these items, if you want to make a comment, you need to fill out one of the comment cards. I think they're pink, the outside on the table.
Yellow,
the outside on the table. If anybody's got those filled out for any of the items on down on the agenda, just bring them forward here to Boyd or myself. Also, any questions from the public on this presentation? No questions from the public? Comment, okay. Any comments? We'll hit comments from the RAC in just a minute. So, John Larson, you've got a comment on our presentation.
John Larson with SFW. It's good to be here tonight with all of you. I just want to let Justin know you did a great job, and we accept the division's plan as presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments by the RAC? Okay. Any discussion or motion by the RAC? This is an action item.
I'll make the motion. We approve it as the division has it proposed.
I second it.
Motion and second. All in favor? Unanimous?
Raise your hand.
It's unanimous. Okay. Next item on the agenda, box bowls, permit recommendations for 2015. Justin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tonight I'm going to present the Bucks Bowls once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations for this upcoming year. To begin, I'd like to highlight some of the deer permits that we've had. There's an error in this graph, and I apologize for that. In 2014, we harvested 28,000 deer statewide, but for general season it was only 26,000. I apologize, that should be a little bit lower for the general season. But essentially what this graph shows is over the last 10 years, what we've harvested on our general season units. And as you can see, in 2006 and 2007, had great years in harvest. The next 4 years were kind of in a lull, and the last three have really picked up for us again, which has been good news for deer hunters. Fawn production and trends over time. Early 2000s, we hit some pretty low fawn production numbers in the state. We climbed out of that and dipped back down again. In the last 6 years or so, we've been between 61 and 65 fawns per 100 does statewide. Buck to doe ratio trends over the last 20 years or so. In 1993 and 1994, on general season public land units, our buck to doe ratios were below 10. They were around 8. And then we climbed out of that and throughout the 90s. And for much of 2000, the 2000s, we hovered around 15 bucks per 100 does, had some peaks, had some valleys. But the last 3 years, our buck to doe ratios have done really well in the state. And right now, on public land general season units, We're over 21 bucks per 100 does statewide, which is pretty impressive. Moving on to the general season deer permit recommendation summary, we're recommending an increase of 2,250 permits, mostly in response to that increase in buck to doe ratio we've seen over the last few years, for a total of 87,050 permits. However, on the 30 units, we are recommending a decrease on one unit, no change on 17, and then increases on 12. I wanted to present this a little bit different this year, so that way, as I go around the state, regions can spend more time on their particular units. So what I have here is the northern region. I have the unit on the far left, the objective, what we're managing for next, whether it's 15 to 17 bucks per 100 does or 18 to 20, and then the three-year buck-to-doe ratio right there in the middle. The buck-to-doe ratio trend, which is simply depicting that our buck-to-doe ratio from this year relative to last year. The permits that the Wildlife Board approved in 2014 and then this year's current recommendation. So for the northern region, we recommend an increase on the cash by 250 permits. For the central region, we're recommending increases on the Wasatch Mountains West and Central Mountains NEBO units. For the southern region, we're recommending increases on the Beaver, Fillmore Pavon, Mount Dutton, Zion, Monroe, and the Boulder Caparois unit. For the southeast region, I recommend an increase on the Central Mountains Manti Center Fell. And then finally, for the northeast region, recommending a decrease in 150 permits on the North Slope because of the three-year average on that buck-to-doe ratio, and then increases in permits on the South Slope, Yellowstone, and the Wasatch Mountains of Inaquin and Current Creek. Moving on to premium limited entry deer units, we manage these units in two ways. One is with normal premium limited entry permits, and the other is with management buck permits. So for normal permits that we issue on premium limited entry units, we're managing for 40% of the bucks that are harvested to be 5 years or older. And on the Henry Mountains, our three-year average is 72, and on the Poncegon, it's 58. And then for the postseason buck-to-doe ratio, we're managing for 40 to 55 bucks per 100 does, and on the Henry Mountains we're at 52, and on the Poncegon we're at 44. So how does this translate to permits? For the Henry Mountains, we're recommending an increase of one permit from 48 to 49. And in this situation, we're not necessarily adding more permits to the system. There's a landowner association down there that gets a permit every 3 years. Last year they had it, and this year, instead of just doing away with that permit, we're issuing it back out to the public draw. And then on the Poncegon, no change in permits from last year, 135. For management buck permits, we're recommending a decrease of 5 on the Henry Mountains from 35 to 30, and then on the Poncegon, an increase of 2 from 14 to 16 in the public draw. Again, this is a scenario where we're not necessarily adding more tags to the system. The CWMU on the Poncegon handed back 2 permits, and so instead of doing away with them, we wanted to give them to public draw hunters. So, let's see, moving on to limited entry deer units. What we have is these units are managed for 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does, and the three-year average is on the far right. So on the Bookcliff South and the South Slope Diamond Mountain units, we're exceeding our buck-to-doe ratio objectives. On the Fillmore Oak Creeks and Dolores Triangle were below, and the other three units are within the sideboards. When it comes to limited entry deer permits, there's not a lot of movement on most of these units for this year. The major changes that are highlighted in green, the North Slope Summit unit, which is essentially the high country buck hunts on the north side of the Uintas. These are deer that migrate into Wyoming prior to the deer hunt starting, and so we wanted to set up a limited entry hunt to allow Utah hunters to harvest these before they leave the state. And then on the West Desert Vernon, are recommending an increase of 10 permits there as well. In November, we passed a new hunt for late season muzzleloader deer hunts. And these are limited entry hunts that occur on general season units that are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, and they're exceeding that 20 buck per 100 doe limit. And so the recommendations here are for a total of 46 permits, and we wanted to start conservatively as we rolled out this new program. Looking at the total number of limited entry deer permits this year, it's an increase of 257 from last year for a total of 1,068. One other thing I want to highlight is the multi-season hunts that they're near the bottom with 25 permits. This was a new hunting strategy that we implemented in November where a limited entry hunter could potentially hunt or could hunt in the archery muzzleloader in any weapon seasons, and there'll be 25 permits recommended tonight. Moving on to elk, we recommend no change in spike or any bull permit numbers, but we do recommend an increase of 200 permits for the youth any bull, as the regions were looking for opportunities to increase youth bull hunting opportunities. This is one where we thought we could do that with 300 permits and 5,000 youth applying annually. We thought this would be a good opportunity for them. And then a decrease in 5 permits on the late season youth any bull. Moving on to limited entry elk permits, statewide we're recommending an increase of 96 for a total of 2,938. As you look at the 7.5 to 8-year-old units, this is the highest quality we manage for, and we're recommending a decrease in 6 permits this year. As you look at the average ages, we're at or below on all of them, but the thing that was really promising this year was all the age trends were quite a bit higher, and they're trending in the right direction. And the last 4 years or so, we've cut pretty drastically in this age category, and we're getting this age category back, which is good news. Looking at the 6.5 to 7-year-old units, we recommend a decrease on the Central Mountains Nebo, but an increase on the Bookless Bitter Creek and Indian Peaks units for an increase of 9 permits from last year. Looking at the 5.5 to 6-year-old units, all these units are at or exceeding their average age, and we recommend increases on the La Salles and the Wasatch Mountains for increase of 65 permits in this age category. And then finally, for 4.5 to 5-year-old units, recommend an increase of 28 permits with increases on the Cache Meadowville South and the Ponsagon, and with a decrease in permits on the Cache North. Moving on to pronghorn, we recommend an increase of 23 permits statewide. If you look at the any weapon, it does show a decrease of 30 permits from last year. And the reason for that is we added a couple of muzzleloader hunts to some of our more popular units. And so those any weapon permits were simply transferred from that category to the muzzleloader is all that is. And then finally, for our once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations, there's just not a lot of movement in permits being recommended. In moose, desert bighorns, Rocky Mountain bighorns, or mountain goats. Really, the highlight is on the bison, we're recommending a decrease of 11 permits from last year statewide. And that's all I have for the game recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Any questions by the rack?
That's pretty quick, Justin. Kind of busy there, trying to get home tonight, huh?
No, I go back to any of this.
No, I'm just teasing you. No, the question I had was on that Henry's Mountain, the deer management. It seemed like it was a reduction from like a 5 permit reduction. What was the reason for that?
Yeah, if you look at the buck-to-doe ratio on the Henrys, we've generally been in the mid-50s, high 50s in some cases. And this last year where it went from 55 to 48, we just felt like, you know, we could decrease a few permits and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. We were at 30 for a long time, and then as that buck-to-doe ratio kept climbing, we said, let's go to 35. And now that we're seeing it reverse a little bit, we've cut back a little.
I see. Thank you.
Yeah.
Could you put the summit? Yeah, the high country buck where you were increasing tags and you were decreasing the buck tags in Daggett County. Could you explain, is that different deer?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the North Slope unit, they are the same. It's in the same unit, but the North Slope summit is kind of that north face, and those deer are migrating into Wyoming. And then where we're doing reductions in general season, let me go to that. On the North Slope, the bulk of that is on the south slope of the. Let's see, Dax, how do you explain that? Where the North Slope, it's a different part of the unit.
Let's have Amy explain.
Yeah, sorry, take a stab at that if you would, please.
Amy Van Wert. So I was a little confused by this too, because when I recommended the 3100, they said that 200 would come out of that. So
what do you mean?
The 200 permits I recommended for the summit were going to come out of the 3100 total that were recommended for the North Slope, is what I was told when I did the recommendation.
Who told you that?
Right. Might have been Northern Region told me. I don't know.
Okay.
This is the first I saw.
So, would you want to reduce it more? Is that what you're saying?
Well, if we're going to have 200 on the North Slope summit, we'd probably go down to 2,900 on the North Slope general season.
I don't know if that's necessary, because in talking with Dave Rich, the biologist in the Northern Region that recommended it, he's saying those deer are simply not available for the general season deer hunter during the rifle, because they're just simply gone.
Yeah, and I can see that during the general season, the summit portion doesn't really get hunted at all.
Okay.
So we can leave it how it is. It's just a little
good, so new to me tonight. Just to be clear, you were thinking it was going to be less than that. Okay,
yeah.
I apologize, Amy.
Can I follow up with anything about that?
Yeah, you might get different answers, so
yeah.
Go with Amy. So.
So it encompasses some of the same country. Are the hunts going to run together, or is this high country hunt going to be earlier?
The high country hunt will be earlier. It's going to overlap with the spike elk hunt, and that was the way that we felt like we could get some limited entry opportunity, because there are some mature bucks that are migrating off. It, to the point where, you know, come the third Saturday in October, many of those deer are out of the state at that point. So this is a hunt that they used to have years ago. It had a ton of popularity. When they went buck bull combo, it kind of was done away with, and they wanted to reinstate it. So.
But if you don't get one of those premium permits, then you can go right back in there with the regular season and hunt the same area.
Correct. If you don't draw the limited entry North Slope unit, a second choice, you know, you could put in for general season North Slope, hunt the same areas, but just essentially a different.
Just a little later.
Yeah, and the North Slope does have the summit boundary has a smaller boundary than the North Slope unit as a whole.
Right, because the North Slope unit goes clear over to Colorado.
Yeah. But was that all correct, Amy? Anything you want to add?
Yeah, the summit hunt, the high winds, is like a limited entry hunt, so you can't go back in during the general season.
It is a different boundary, too.
Yes.
So there's three subunits in Daggett County: Summit, West Daggett, Three Corners, and North Slope General Season Deer Tag is valid for all three of those subunits.
Number 8.
Yes, all in Unit 8 there. Yeah, so we've got A, B, and C, you know, from west to east. So this limited entry hunt, the North Slope Summit limited entry hunt, which is a couple weeks earlier, is only in the Summit subunit, which is managed out of the Northern Region.
So
that's the 200 early permits, and the reason they recommend that is because they feel that a lot of those deer migrate into Wyoming before the rifle deer season starts towards the end of October.
Does that even go into Daggett County?
No. It shouldn't.
Yeah, so I misspoke with the Daggett County Unit 8. It's Summit County there.
So then I guess my question to that is, them bucks aren't getting counted anyway in your buck-to-doe ratio.
Right.
Okay.
I apologize for the confusion, Amy.
You probably won't have very many people apply for it this first year.
So
it was popular
in the northern region. It is. It's extremely popular up in that part of the state. So, yeah. And if not, get you a limited entry tag over the counter.
Any other questions from Rec? Any questions from the public? Questions, not comments. No questions from the public. And let's go to our comment cards. We've got the public. We've got those two individuals. Jesse McKee wants to make a comment on this permit numbers.
Jesse McKee. With your Book Cliff area on your north and south, just from us being down there this year, we have a place down there, so you know, there's no maintaining ranch, and you can feel that north side definitely even over hunted compared to the south side, wages proportionally. And extremely, I went down there and visited a bunch of our hunters, and not just our hunters, LVU's hunters, and just in general hunters, and very disappointed this year on the north side. A lot of those tags, you know, people that pay for ours as well, wanting to look elsewhere. That unit truly just kind of, and I disagree with me, but a good draw unit is getting pretty pathetic in the draw unit. A lot of disappointed hunters myself, you know, I don't even really want to go there, but that was one of our thoughts was that north side. When you guys split that area there, maybe overdid on the north compared to the south, just put a lot more over there. And then I could be wrong, I don't even know what the numbers are as compared to those two on your book clips.
The total numbers or the buck to go ratio?
Just on your north numbers, how many tags are given compared to your south?
Let me pull it up for you.
It's about a third.
And I'm sure y'all have your reasons and stuff. That's just, you know, from us being down there, man, that area down there has been taking a hit. And, I don't really know what the answer is to fix it, but there's a lot of small bucks. They'll get big maybe, but there's a lot of small bucks getting killed as those numbers are going out. So I kind of think that may help a little bit pull some of those from the north over to the south.
Thank you for your comment, Justin.
Thank you.
John Larson
with SFW. Just would like to let Justin know you did a great job once again. We accept the division's plan as presented with the following exceptions: that on the Vernon unit, the Manti unit, Zion unit, and Beaver unit, that those buck deer permits stay the same as last year. Just our general membership feels like in those units, and this is a really tough discussion because we've got great data for the first time in a long time, and you've got a three-year trend, and I think that, you know, that data is as good as you're going to get. I don't know how you get it any better, but at the same time, for our general membership that live in those areas, they just feel like they're not seeing those animals, obviously. We've got this discussion the last few nights. But so that would be our recommendation. And then secondly, I'd also say I want to commend you for the youth permits on the elk going up by 200. I think that's a great idea. That's a great way to get the kids started and give them a target, and if you can increase that, that's a great thing to do. Thank you.
I'm giving too much credit to
increase the lake season.
Excuse me. That was Vernon, Manti. That was Vernon, Manti. Vernon, Manti, Zion, and Beaver, and with a real emphasis on the Vernon and Manti units. Those two, they get a lot of attention, and we have a couple outfitters that are members, and it's kind of the same story there. They're just not seeing the animals they'd like to see, and instead of increasing those, let's give them a chance to come back.
Okay, I don't have any other comment cards from the public. So, comments from the rack, discussion.
Justin, can you pull up the slides that show those what?
Sure.
That John was just talking about.
Yeah, the first one he talked about, the West Desert Vernon, I actually think John makes a pretty good case here because this isn't one where the Vernon is way outside of the buck to doe ratio. In fact, it's at the lower end for the three-year average on 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does. But what we had there in 2012 and 2013 is the Vernon is a migratory population, and if you don't get out there early to classify those bucks, you miss it. And what you're gathering really isn't representative of what's there. And we've had that happen in 2012 and 2013. And this last year, the biologist got out there at the right time, classified them, and said, you know, we're really at the upper end of our buck-to-bill ratio. And he feels like we have been, even though the data may not necessarily represent that. And so it was just an increase in 10 permits to show that. But, you know, I respect John's perspective on this because it's not one that screams, yeah, do an increase because you're way over. Moving to general season units, let me go back to there real quick. The Central Mountains Manti, this is one that does make that case. We're managing for 15 to 17 bucks per 100 does. Our three-year average is 19. This last year on the Manti, we were 22.8 bucks per 100 does on a unit that's 15 to 17. And years ago when we were going unit by unit, we had well over 10,000 permits that were issued on the Manti. And we made pretty big cuts so that we can anticipate that growth and get those buck-to-doe ratios back. And we feel like they're there and want to provide that opportunity. See, there are two others. I think they're in the southern region. The Beaver, this is another one where a few years ago we were about 3,500 permits. We cut it down to 3,000. The buck-to-doe ratio was responding. The trend has been up every year. But, you know, with that again, it's not outside of 18 to 20. It's still at that lower end of 18. It's just we're really excited about the trend and want to give a little bit of that opportunity back. And then the Zion, the last 3 years, we've been about between 23.5 and 24.5 bucks per 100 does on that unit. Every year, and we have done some slow increases on this unit. I think we're up from 2,800 permits to 3,000 to 3,100 to 32, but the buck-to-doe ratio is still really high. You know, the three-year average is 24. So, again, just trying to provide some opportunity where we can. Did I miss any, or was that it? Okay.
Other comments, or we were just discussing the buck-to-doe situation. Could you go over the same numbers there based on the comments?
Yeah, let me get back to the limited entry. There we go. So these are the buck to doe ratios on the Book Cliffs North, 27, 33, and 39. So they are climbing out from where they were a few years ago. And then on the Book Cliffs South, it's a little more stable, but still above average all 3 years. And I think with this, Dax, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I hate to speak for regions, but On the book list where the fawn-to-doe ratios have increased over the last couple of years, and we have had better production out there, I think what you have is more bucks. But with that, you may also have some younger bucks that are just trying to get in. And that's the reason the permits were stayed the same this year, is because even though we can make a case to increase more on the south and some of that, we felt like these are younger bucks and that buck-to-doe ratio is climbing back in. You have anything to add, Dax, or is that a pretty fair assessment?
No, I guess just from the regional perspective, you know, our numbers are coming up. We want to give that opportunity to people that hunt limited entry deer that want that opportunity, but we're getting a lot of feedback from folks that they're not seeing the quality of deer they'd like to see. And so even though, you know, we were kind of right there at borderline, whether we increase or not, the buck-to-doe ratio is up, but, you know, a lot of them are younger bucks, lots of two-year-olds. And so, you know, maybe we just not be super aggressive on this. Let's hold off for a year, get another year on some of these bucks before we kind of look at it again and see. But that is one of the things, you know, we manage to a buck-to-doe ratio. Doesn't necessarily mean they're all going to be big bucks, but we might have a lot of them. That's what we've seen in the book clips. We've got a few really good years in a row. We have a lot of yearling and two-year-old bucks.
Dax, do you have an age agenda on this, or objective on this
bar? No, on a regular limited entry unit, there's not an age objective, just the buck-to-doe ratio.
Yeah. What about hunter satisfaction survey? What do those numbers look like for that unit, particularly the north side?
You have that, Clint? Yeah.
It's like a 1-5 scale, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 1-5 scale for the book lifts, the satisfaction. The archery was 3.8, and it's an incredible archery hunt.
Yeah, I mean, north.
You know, the only unit we split is the rifle hunt. So the archery and muzzleloader hunts are combined. For the whole unit. The rifle hunt, it was 3.3 for satisfaction on the north, and the south was the same, and then the muzzleloader was 2.9.
And so we have seen, you know, maybe a little bit of a dip in satisfaction, and that's why we're not increasing, you know, we're not really gung-ho to dish out a bunch more tags so people can go out and kill maybe less than average bucks. But the average buck killed out there last year was roughly, you know, a 22-inch 3x4 or 4-point right around there. And about 4.5-year-old bucks are about the age of what we're killing. And so, like I say, so that's not, you know, what some people expect, but other people, you know, it's the hunt of a lifetime for them, too.
Well, and that's what I'd like to keep it as, is a quality hunt out there, and I feel that it's slipping away quick.
Yeah. On the permit numbers where the north had a lot more permits, is that just geographic area? They're just bigger.
You know, we just have more deer that go on the north. Basically, what we estimate is that seasonal migration that takes place about late September, early October, we're getting about a third of the deer that will migrate to the south, and then two-thirds of the deer go to the north. And that's why you see the split like it is, too, with the buck permits on the right farm.
Can I explain one more thing on this? It shows decreases on the booklets for the north and the south. The reality is that the total number of permits on the booklets is staying the same. Essentially, some of those decreases are going to that multi-season hunt, to where if you draw it, you can hunt all three seasons. And the only way to do that was to take them from the rifle. So if there's confusion on why it looks like a decrease, that's the justification why. I don't think I did a good job explaining that earlier. So.
Yeah,
I just have a question for maybe Dax or Clint. What do we need to do to get the quality up in the book cliffs on the north? There's a lot of dissatisfaction on that. Is cutting permit numbers going to do it? Or from what I see, we've got a severe predator problem out there.
You know, I think that last comment you made, we are really trying to do our best to put pressure on predators right now. We increased bear permits. We went harvest objective on cougars. And so we are really making an effort there. We have right now a contract coyote hunter out there that's killed, I think, around 9 coyotes already this spring. And we've gunned with Wildlife Services, I think 230-something coyotes too last year. And so we have made a lot of efforts that way. The other efforts that we've made are habitat, working on getting more guzzlers, water developments, reseedings, chainings, full hog work. I mean, all that stuff benefits deer. And we have seen, like Justin said, we have seen our fawn crop start, you know, our production start to increase a little bit, but really we can do a lot, you know, it can do better. And I think hopefully putting this amount of pressure on the predators that we have been, hopefully it'll, you know, combined with everything else will help too. But there are a lot of young bucks out there. If you take time to really pay attention, you know, our buck numbers are there, but they're all maybe 2.5-year-old deer. So, you know, I had the opportunity to hunt it last year on the archery hunt, and for me personally, what I was, you know, expecting after spending time out there, it was an amazing hunt. I mean, I had opportunities to stalk multiple bucks, and you know, I didn't kill the biggest one I saw, but I had a lot of fun.
I just hear a lot of dissatisfaction on the rifle hunt of the quality.
The rifle hunt was kind of tough this year because the weather really didn't cooperate, and I think those bucks could really scatter out if they're not pushed down by the weather. I think a lot of those doe and fawns moved down early, but a lot of those bucks, I think, were slow to come down, and so it made it a lot more difficult of a hunt than it usually is.
Thank you for your efforts.
Any more discussion? If there's no more discussion, look for a motion.
On the whole plan?
Yes. One action item. I don't think we all want to break it out. Okay. Today, we need a discussion. Boyd's bringing up a good point. We had the discussion of some of the state numbers that were suggested by SFW on the Vernon numbers, the Manti numbers, the Zion and the Beaver. I mean, we as Iraq kind of talked about maybe the north and south numbers on the book cliffs. Like you said, though, we've opened the multi-season hunts, and so we put permit numbers in there.
Yeah.
How many permit numbers were put in there?
It looks like it'd be 14, because it would just be the difference of 190 to 179 and 66 and 63.
Okay, so the difference was put in the multi-season.
Correct. I just wanted to be forthright, because I didn't want to appear as if we're petting when we're truly not. They're still there.
Yeah. You want to address the other stuff? The other four units on the state? Tim?
I got a question about that. On that multi-season? Okay, on our tribal permits that we get from you guys, those permits are the multi. The way I look at it is, you know, I don't know how many that the tribe gives, but where do we come in on this multi permit? Or is our permit good for that?
That's a separate issue.
Yeah, I can answer that. I think so that would all be governed based on the agreement, the cooperative agreement that we have. And what it would be is the tribes, for the North Book Cliffs, I'd have to look. I know it's 0.149 for the whole Book Cliffs, but the North Book Cliffs is slightly higher than that. It'd be a percentage. So if we issue 15 permits for the multi-season permit, if the tribe's percentage was, you know, 50%, it's not 50%, but it's somewhere between 15% and 40%. Yeah. I'll have to look it up. We have it.
Yeah.
You know, then, so if the tribe's percentage was 50%, just to keep it easy, you know, and we issued 14 tags, the tribe would be able to issue 7 of those to tribal members. So it'll be governed just like all our other permits through that cooperative agreement that was signed by the business committee, yeah. Governor Leavitt, yeah. A few years back.
Yeah. So. Exactly. So, because I know a lot of the times we don't get to find out about it until after the fact. So, you know,
and I know you guys have put your proclamation together already, but exactly. See, we're still in the process of setting our permit numbers. Yeah. So, kind of, you know, so as soon as our permit numbers are finalized, we can.
I guess what we could do is go back in and, you know, do a special meeting or a special board meeting and adopt it.
Yeah. Okay, so
I guess I'd like to do a little discussion on what John with SFW talked about. Kind of looking at that Manti raising to 500 tags, and it maybe we don't need to go that high. Is that Zion was only 100, Beaver was 150, but I can understand leaving Vernon where it is and maybe not getting so excited on the Manti unit.
If I could comment, do you have a recommendation?
Not yet, I'm just thinking about it. I'd love to hear John's comment.
I would just say, I think you're right. I think, you know, that out of those four, the two that are critical to us are Vernon and Manti. And Manti specifically last night, you know, at the southeastern region, RAC, we had several committee members there. And what they're seeing is, you know, there's deer there. A lot of those deer are becoming urban deer. I mean, they're moving down into town, so some of those numbers and the counts are probably accurate, but those deer are not going to be hunted. That's part of the issue there. That's one of the issues. And then, again, back on the Vernon, where that's a migratory route, I don't know how you even really get solid data for that. So you got to be careful, because if you do raise it, you could do some damage there.
Justin, could you take that slide to show the RAC here, the Manti numbers?
Yes. So let me give you the background. What I don't show, I show the 3-year buck to doe ratio on the Manti on this, which is 19. But in 2012, the buck to doe ratio is 15.6. and then in 2013 it jumped to 18.7, and last year it was 22.8. So it is increasing quite a bit, so there could be some opportunity there.
Design the Beaver?
Yeah, go back to that as well. Again, the Beaver's one where it is on the lower end of the buck-to-doe ratio, but it's trending in the right direction. So the recommendation was based on the fact that we've cut 500 permits, and we're just trying to get a few of those back because we like where that herd's going. And then again, the Zion, the last 3 years has been between 23.5 and 24.5 bucks per 100 does, all 3 years. So, but in full transparency, we have added 100 permits last year to the Zion and 200 the year before that, and that buck to doe ratio just has really stayed pretty stable. So.
What were the total permits last year we increased? You call that?
Yeah, on which unit?
On the overall state last year.
There was a reduction last year.
There was a reduction last year?
Yeah, yeah. There's been a reduction last few years. So.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. That's a good question. Okay. They talked about that because the extra numbers went to the multi-seasonal. So. Any other discussion we need to discuss? The north-south ratio with the multi-season on the book cliffs?
I think it's worth discussing a little bit. From 57 and 161, the permits on the north-south or the book cliff?
Let me get back there.
57 and 161?
I'm sorry, it's the far right, the 179 and the 63.
Oh, total column?
And, you know, with this recommendation, when I know Dax and Brad Crompton, the biologist in the southeast part of the state, when they put that recommendation together last year, one thing they were trying to do is say, okay, let's put it out there, let's see if this holds, let's see if this is the right ratio for buck to doe on the north and the south. And if you look at the buck to doe ratio, you know, this last year we were 39 on the north, 40 on the south. We haven't been that close in a long time. And so, you know, there might be some value in keeping the permits the same and letting us get another year of data and saying, okay, is this the right ratio? And if it's not, make those tweaks accordingly. So just a suggestion, though.
Okay. Well, I'm ready to make a motion.
Talking to Tim and Dax, it sounds to me like that hunts, it depends on the weather. Even coming down from the other side to that side. So is that right, Mr. McKee?
I would say it depends on the weather a lot. And last year would be a hard year to go all of this last year, been summer since summer.
So the right type of weather, this is a whole different scenario. It's been
bad for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
That's because of the weather. If you were to go down there like last year, take for example, if you went down there in the middle part of November, maybe the first part of December, the deer were starting to come in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't being pushed by snow very much at all, you know, during the whole... They weren't moving, in my opinion, to the normal spots where I seen them on.
I don't think anybody in the basin is being pushed by snow.
I know for a fact that when we did our head count back in January, there was a lot of deer and elk still way up high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't see them into our canyon until January-ish.
Okay, there's no further discussion. Let's call for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve it as the division is proposed, with exception of leaving Vernon as it is. I take the Manti unit and only raising it 100 instead of the 500 proposed, just to do something there, but maybe not quite so drastic. And the Beaver unit, leave it as it is.
No change on the Beaver.
Don't raise it the 150 proposed, leave it as it is. Zion, I kind of looked at that. I guess I'm a little comfortable leaving that as your proposal was.
Same way, it's a tough one.
So the only one that you're recommending a change to is the Manti, and that would be 100 rather than...
No, I want to leave Vernon like it was last year.
Okay.
And leave Beaver like it was last year. And lower the proposal for Manti down to 100 instead of 500. How you going to amend it?
There was a hunting unit called the Southwest Desert, I believe, that you showed at the ratio of 28 bucks per 100 with only 750 permits. Why didn't you raise that? Those numbers, is that a hard hunting area, or not getting any pressure out there?
No, that's a great question, because the Southwest Desert, it's there's a ton of country with no deer in it, and then you get pockets of deer on some of these isolated mountain ranges in southwest Utah, and so it's a great unit because the buck to doe ratio is high, but hunter success rates are really low, hunter satisfaction rates are some of the lowest in the state, and when you're hunting these desert areas, some hunters go out and they go days without seeing a deer. And so it's one of these deals where we recognize the buck to doe ratio is high. And I think if we just increase more and more permits, I don't know if we'd get the buck to doe ratio down. And I think we may just frustrate some of our hunters because it's such a hard area.
My question was, could you shift some of the beaver numbers out that way? And that's probably a no.
I would hold off on that because we just increased on the Southwest Desert last year as well, and so it's just we're trying to find that balance of providing the opportunity and making sure hunters are having an enjoyable hunt. So it's a tough one.
Okay, do we have a second on the motion?
A second to motion.
Rod second on the motion. Okay, you want to restate the motion? Did you get
the motion is that as we leave Vernon as those numbers alone as they were in 2014, and we leave Beaver alone as it was in 2014, and that Manti, we only raise that tax 100 instead of the 500 presently being proposed.
Zion, I
was going to stay with the proposal.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
I didn't get who all was in favor.
I voted. You voted yay. Okay, so it's 8-2. Okay.
Could you give me the numbers of who approved again?
It is kind of odd. Why do we vote in other regions? Why do we delve into other RACs regions?
Because you get to.
Did we get? I mean, that's just how the process works. They could vote based on our north slope, and then what weight would that have in the final decision?
The final decision will end up being in the Wildlife Board, okay. And they'll take all of it together.
Okay.
They'll take both regions and what they've done with the people that know more about it,
okay.
And they'll weigh out ours.
So if there was a contradiction,
yeah.
They'd go for all of it.
Yeah.
No, that's not first. What you just said is not true.
Bribes and all.
We'll take into account what the region says. We won't go with the region necessarily,
right.
But we'll take into account what the region says. Because what you just said is true, or what Dan just said is he doesn't know a lot about attorneys. He doesn't. Those guys last night, for instance, spent a couple of hours debating this about Manti. And so we probably will take into account what they said about Manti more than here, but we won't necessarily go with them.
See, oftentimes you'll have people in the area that actually hunt down there and will provide you with information of that area and expect you to make the best decision that you can make.
Yeah, go ahead.
Could I ask, I'd like a little bit more clarification on the Unit 8, which is more slope, three corners for deer, and the fact that you proposed the new hunting unit for the Big Country, or whatever you call it. And I believe that the numbers were reduced in Unit 8 significantly. And I think that I was under the impression that it was because of the new unit that was opened up for the Big Country. But then the discussion, High Country, but then the discussion earlier was that they were different units.
They're not necessarily different. Okay, this gets tricky, because what you have is a limited entry hunt that's in a smaller area of the North Slope. And so you have the North Slope unit, which is a larger area, and then North Slope Summit. What we're trying to do is take provide some Utah hunters some opportunity to harvest deer that are leaving the unit, they're leaving the state prior to the general season deer hunt occurring. And
okay, I understand that part, okay. But what's the reason for reducing the numbers on Unit 8 in the general hunt?
Let me give you this data. On the North Slope, we're managing for $18 to $20 per 100 does. And if you look at the buck to doe ratio over the last few years, it's been 15.6, 15.4, 17.3. So we're trying, so the 3-year average is 16. So we're cutting permits to try to get to $18 to $20 per 100 does. So when we're under our objective on our buck to doe ratio, we cut permits to try to get there. And if we're over objective, we increase permits to lower that buck to doe ratio. That's kind of the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish, I guess.
It has nothing to do with the High Country unit then?
The High Country bucks, those deer aren't available to Utah hunters during that rifle hunt anyways. They are to some of the archers and muzzleloaders and some of that, but for the most part, a lot of those deer are leaving the state, and so we're just carving out that subsection to provide some opportunities. So.
That helps me understand
Do you have anything to add, Jackson?
Those deer that were proposing to hunt on that earlier limited entry hunt, really, we almost are looking at that as a bonus opportunity for our sportsmen to be able to harvest a few of those bucks, because a lot of them leave that unit. But the northern region doesn't even classify deer in the summit portion, because there's no deer there in November when they go there and they're classified. If they drove into Wyoming, they could classify a bunch of deer probably, but they don't even attempt to classify deer in that summit portion. And the bulk of our hunting pressure during the rifle hunt, which is 60% of our permits to any weapon hunt, is in that West Daggett and Three Corners unit. And those units, the buck to doe ratio is trending up, but it's still not where we want it to be. And also those are the units where we probably got the most negative feedback from general season deer hunters in our region was from that unit. So that's kind of why we recommend a decrease for that unit. And then, like I said, we're kind of looking at those. That early summit hunt is almost separate deer, bonus deer that aren't normally part of the equation when it comes to our regular general season rifle hunt.
These guys can't
This is a
Thank you for the motion vote. Let's go to Ant Runners Permit Recommendations 2015. Justin Chen.
Well, I'm smiling because I've never gone through a Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime presentation where my most difficult question came from one of my own biologists, so thank you. That's been great.
By the way, you need to talk with him.
Yeah. Amy, my email is Justin Shannon. Okay, tonight I'm going to present the Antlerless recommendations for 2015. So again, I showed this slide in the last presentation, but I want you to focus on the last 6 years where our fawn-to-doe ratio has been very stable at 61 to 65 fawns per 100 does, which has been good for us in Utah. I also showed this last year for the first time, and I got good feedback from the RAC members and the public that attended, because what our agency's done over the last five, we're starting in our sixth year now, is we go to seven or eight different units throughout the state, and we radio collar adult females and fawns. And from there, we're able to estimate survival, which has been a really good indicator for us to know how many of our adults and fawns are surviving annually. And so that top line is our adult female survival. So about 84 to 86% of our adult females survive annually, which is average for Utah and for the West. That's pretty good survival. And in 2010 and 2011 statewide, you can see that between 52 and 53% of our fawns were surviving an entire year. And then in 2012 and 2013, those ratios jumped up to 78%. And then in 2014, we had almost as many fawns survive as adults, which is exceptional. We had 82% fawn survival this year, which is really, really good. And as a result of those two things, looking at the production, which was two slides ago, and that increased survival rate over the last 3 years, we're able to really do a better job of estimating our deer population statewide. And so this graph shows our deer estimates over the last 20 plus years or so. And in the early 90s, we certainly lost a lot of deer. We climbed out of it, and things crashed again in some of those drought years. We climbed out of it again. But the last 3 years, we've really grown some deer in the state, which has been good. And our statewide estimates, just over 355,000. Moving on to antlerless deer permits, these are valid for the public draw. 2010, we issued 1,750 permits, took some cuts in 2011 and 12 and really bottomed out. And we're recommending an increase of 215 additional antlerless deer permits this year statewide. With that, recommending some new hunts and boundary changes as well. And these are really designed to reduce deer damage on private lands. So in the northeast region on the Manila-Phil Pico, we're recommending a boundary change and a new hunt there for deer. Yeah, in addition to that, Circleville North and Circleville South, trying to target some valley deer that are causing ag damage.
Could you tell us a little bit about the Manila-Phil Pico? This was something I just learned about. Of course, that's where I'm from. So
yeah.
I believe that, as I read the literature, that it's a bow and shotgun and muzzleloader only hunt.
That's correct. Yeah.
And where did this come from? Is this somebody's idea to hunt them in town or something?
You gotta take a stab at it.
Yeah,
thank you.
My name's Amy Vandenberg. So we have a elk antlerless hunt too of the same boundary, the Manila-Phil Pico, and for that they can use rifle for it. So we've been getting increased complaints from landowners up there about deer damage. So we're using the same boundary to try to harvest antlerless deer that are causing the damage that are resident. And we're doing the shotgun bow muzzleloader only because we're having a deer muzzleloader deer hunt, the general to see some muzzleloader deer hunt. We didn't want to combine rifle and muzzleloader hunts at the same time.
Oh, so
this is
going to
be the same
going
time.
To be at the
same time
the end of September.
Yeah, and we just didn't want to combine rifle and muzzleloader. So it's just
I thought that they were going to try to do something within the confines of the city limits or something.
No, this encompasses all of like the everything below the Forest Service. So we got like South Valley, Philippe, out by the dump, that's BLM.
Okay, that helps me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, and then finally, in the southern region, they're recommending a new hunt on the Panguitch Lake, Panguitch Valley unit as well. So this is something, presenting this a little different as well. Instead of just saying there's 625 permits statewide, I wanted to do a better job of showing where these increases are occurring. So these increases will be on the North Slope, the Beaver, Mount Dutton, and Panguitch Lake, in addition to the hunts similar to last year on Box Elder, Monroe, and Pine Valley for the 625. Moving on to elk, our statewide population trend has been slightly increasing over the last several years, and with this year, through our modeling efforts, we estimate there's just over 81,000 elk, so pretty stable from last year, maybe slightly down a bit. Our population objective is just shy of 71,000, and we're about 10,000 out over objective statewide. For the number of permits that we're recommending, 14,985 public draw permits, and these are the permits that you put in for through the draw system that we have. In addition to that, though, we also have what we call antlerless elk control permits, and those are highlighted in yellow. And last year, even though we had a decrease in public draw permits, we actually had an increase of antlerless elk hunters afield because of this antlerless control permits. And what these are is they're permits that you can draw if you have a buck, a bull, or a once-in-a-lifetime permit, and an antlerless elk hunt falls within one of these units. You can buy an elk permit at a reduced price and hunt that during your buck or bull hunt. So for instance, we have a couple of units in the state where the objective is simply zero, but we have elk there, the Henry Mountain, San Juan, in bull portion, North Santa Fe and the Vernon. The Vernon is a new unit that we're proposing tonight that we'd like to add. And then we also have some units where it's just difficult to obtain antlerless elk harvest. And we're recommending the Mountain Dutton and the Pine Valley units to this list as well tonight. So overall, the recommendations, I wanted to break it up by unit again so we can spend more or less time on these units. For the northern region, their population objective is just shy of 12,000, and their population estimate is over 18,000. And statewide, or for that region, they're recommending an increase in permits of almost 300. In addition to that, they're recommending a new hunt called the Cache Valley Northeast Benches. And I think in your RAC packet, it was called Cache Richmond Hyde Park, but we couldn't use that boundary because it already existed, so I apologize for that. But this is a new hunt that they're proposing to target depredating elk. For the central region, about 600 elk over their objective for the region, and they're recommending a decrease in permits down to 430, and no new hunts or boundary changes are being proposed. For the northeast region, recommending a decrease in about 2,000 public draw permits, and the bulk of those cuts are coming on the Current Creek, the Abinakwin, and the South Slope Yellowstone units. In addition to that, we're recommending new hunts on the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek East. This is just simply extending the boundary of the McCook Ridge hunt. A new hunt on Manila Phil Pico, and then a boundary clarification on North Slope West Daggett. For the southeast region, they're about at their population objective, and we're recommending a decrease of about 85 permits with no new hunts or boundary changes being proposed. For the southern region, really not a lot of change in their recommendations, an increase of about 60 permits, and they're about 100 elk over their population objective. And they're proposing new hunts on the Beaver, Panguitch Lake, and Ponce County units as well. For doe pronghorn permits, recommend a decrease of 25 permits statewide, with all those permits being cut on the Cache, Morgan, Southridge, Ogden unit. And no new hunts or boundary changes are being proposed. And then finally, grantless moose, we're not recommending new hunts or boundary changes and zero permits. And that's all I have for antlerless. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions by the rack?
I have one. On your South Slope Yellowstone, you're saying we're over objective, but yet you're decreasing the number of tags available to the public. Mm-hmm. Just wondering why.
You want to take a stat out of Randall?
Sure.
It is. It is a confusing thing, and it's just a complicated unit, but to be honest, it's the simplest answer to give you. The majority of the winter range on that unit is the tribal lands across the what they call their north unit. And we have the majority of those animals during the winter time move down and winter on the tribe. Almost probably depends on the year. Anywhere from 80% of them some years can be down on there. Makes it very difficult for late season hunts to work over there, which is what a lot of these permits have been. And so that's why one of the units where we've instituted the antlerless control permit that he was referring to a minute ago, where hunters who already are going to be hunting the unit, they either have an elk tag, another elk tag, or a deer tag, or even a moose tag, whatever they already have for that unit, can buy it and hunt that. And we've had a steady increase of that. That's been going up by several hundred each year of the people who have those tags and are buying those. And we're going to have to kind of, we're hitting a point of diminishing returns on our other hunts, where we can only put out so many permits out there before you're killing the same number of animals, but you're frustrating hundreds more hunters to do that. And we've kind of hit that point. The Ute Tribe used to have, just a few years ago, used to have antlerless elk hunts. They were kind of on member antlerless elk hunts that were held on the unit too. They had 400 total tags out there for a number of years for us, and that helped keep some hunting pressure on the tribal land, which helped keep some of the elk pushed back on the forest. They would keep the animals moving. The last couple of years, though, the tribes decided not to have any non-member cow hunts up there, and so they've done away with those hunts. What that's done is turned the tribal land basically into a refuge in the late season. And so the elk move down there, and they are left alone there for the most part for the rest of the year. There is some tribal members have the option to hunt after the elk up there, but that's not a real popular hunt with them. Very few. They'd rather hunt bulls. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tim. That's kind of the opinion I see.
we put it in.
Have you taken some up there?
In a lot of those problems, the ones that are coming down in the hay fields, and that's the ones we more or less sort of think of. So, you know, once you're up on the mountain, a lot of them was upon you guys this year when we were in our head count. It had a lot of.
A lot of them moved back up in January, late January, when they did their survey work this year. It was that some started to move back up because it's such an unusual winter. But there is a lot of them.
By rights, I think there was, if I remember right, I think we had like almost 2,000 extra elk this year.
Yeah. So we're over objective, about 2,000 elk is what we are. And when you get that many elk, when we're up around 7,500 elk total for the population there, we've got to be harvesting. Right now, even with all the harvest we can throw at them, the way we've been doing it, we're just barely keeping up with production, in all honesty. We aren't going to be able to bring that unit down unless we have pretty significant antlerless harvest too on the tribal lands at the same time. We try to coordinate that and keep pressure on both sides so the elk can't go hide on one side of the fence or the other. Our hunts by the state law are have to end the end of January. We can't have any further, you know, cow hunts or any kind of hunt actually after January for elk. So at the end of January for elk. So
it's killing us.
The timing.
We'll hunt them. We'll go ahead and let our members hunt the bulls or spikes after that. But we as on the board, I'm not going to let them kill anything as far as the cow after that time. That's not right.
And what we probably need, we've tried working with the tribe, and we hope you still just to reestablish maybe some kind of antlerless elk hunt there too earlier on during our hunts. We try to keep so the pressure's on both sides, so we can get the antlerless harvest we need to help maintain that population, so it doesn't continue just to grow and grow out of control. But what we found so far with the way we've been doing it is our success rates are dropping off basically on the draw hunts. Are dropping off more and more, and we're just frustrating a lot of hunters and not killing any more elk. We passed that point quite a ways by trying to kill on. But we don't want to kill just those that will always stay on the forest year round. You know, there's some of those, a lot of these elk, like I said, they move back and forth. We understand they're the same elk. Us and the tribe both work together, trying to work together on that to come up with a system to keep some pressure on all of them, not harvest just those that go to the forest, or else pretty soon you won't have any on the forest. And the only thing that really keeps growing is those down below. And so we got to make sure we try to work with the tribe to make sure we have some pressure that way, and we'll keep that working.
From what I understand, I've talked to a couple of the council members, and they're talking about maybe doing an every other year thing. So, you know.
And that's what something and maybe to do.
It's a good thing, you know. So instead of completely taking it out.
That's right. So we'll try to work together. We try to work together with them cooperatively. And it's a complicated process when you got two different systems trying to make recommendations that mesh. You know, they go through their system, and we have to go through ours, try to make it time out at the same time. It makes it hard to get hunts time at the same time, but we'll keep working towards that too. But the really overall, it's just we get that. We work way past the point where we have too many hunters trying to harvest get where they can harvest those elk anyway right now during those later season hunts and things like that. So we've cut them and we're trying to cut it back and use the animal control permits. Like I said, well, the beauty of those is you're not putting any more hunters on the mountain. They're the guys who are going to be there anyway during their hunts. And for the most part, they're going to be the hunters that are there earlier in the fall, too, during the fall hunts, before a lot of those elk do move down onto the tribe. So it gives us a chance to take some antlerless harvest at that time. And so, like I said, that's up now to 900 permits. We're going up by several hundred each year, and we're hoping that permit sale increases and their harvest increases. We hope to, if we get a little better weather pattern situation for them, the right timing of weather with it, maybe we'll get some better harvest that way. Anyway, long answer to a confusing question, I guess. Not a question, just the answer's confusing and complicated. All right,
thank you.
Thank you. Okay, other questions for the rack? Okay, questions by the audience. Go ahead and state your name.
John Larson with SFW. Justin, could you go back to the beaver unit? Just want to leave it one more time.
Third from the top.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Blake Best, dedicated hunter. Justin, on them, take for instance South Slope Yellowstone on your cow elk tags. Is your figure considering the control permits too in that figure? A little confused on that.
Yeah, let me go back to this. What I wanted to highlight, maybe I didn't do a very good job of explaining it. The public draw permits is what's being proposed and approved tonight. The yellow, the antlerless elk control permits, that's something that you can purchase over the counter. And so it's just, if you have that buck or bull permit, and as Randall was saying, if you're already hunting that area, what we're trying to do is harvest elk on the South Slope Yellowstone without necessarily adding additional hunters to it. We want elk to stay in some of these areas to allow for that harvest. So as I go back to South Slope Yellowstone there, what we're approving tonight is 950 draw permits, not necessarily the antlerless elk. Those will be bought in addition to that 950.
So, take for instance, everybody that drew a rifle deer tag, they could buy, in the same unit, they could all have an antlerless elk until that 8,000 quota was met in that particular
unit? No, 8,000, sorry, that's just an estimate.
Okay, thank you.
We're just trying to project what we'll have, but yes, any one of those deer hunters could buy an elk.
So it could potentially cause harm.
Yeah, and last year I think we had about 900 additional hunters in that South Slope Yellowstone, which is the most we've ever had. So, but if you look at it, you know, where we're 2,000 elk over objective in that unit, maybe it's good
it could cause harm.
The success rate last year on the antlerless control permit on the Yellowstone was like 17-18%.
Yeah.
So even though you sell 800-900 of those tags, they really only killed 160 cows.
Thanks for that.
Okay. Any other questions by the public? We have any comments?
No comments. There should be one comment.
One comment.
Okay. Oh, yep. Sorry. Sorry, John.
You're
sorry.
Okay.
Thank you,
John Larson.
John Larson with SFW. Justin, great presentation again. We accept the vision's plan as presented with the.
With the exception of the book cliffs, where you've got an objective of 7,500, but your estimate is 5,500, yet you're asking for an increase. So I would say keep it the same as 2014.
Can we get a chance to talk about why those permits are available, Josh?
Sure.
We recognize we're under objective on the book list, no doubt about that. But on some of these hunts, on some of these areas, we need a little bit of hunting pressure, whether it's to keep elk out of agricultural areas or certain high use areas that we may not necessarily want them on the BLM. In some cases, that on the south end, they'll move down quite a ways, and so it's a way to keep them up on the hill. Some of that stuff, and so with the 130 permits, it's not to knock that population back. In many cases, it's just to add hunting pressure to make sure elk don't feel welcome in some areas. So, is that fair, Dax and Clint? You guys?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And we did increase permits in one of the units, but we also almost tripled the size of the unit too. And a lot of those elk that we want to target on that hunt are on deer winter range. And so having the opportunity to move them around and, like I say, just kind of keep that pressure on them, I think can only help with our deer problem.
Great. Okay, comments by the board, discussion? Go ahead.
Okay, we voted to increase the general buck deer permits this year, and I'm just a little bit leery about increasing the antlerless deer tags in the same year. I'd just like to see it stay the same this year. I don't see any landowners here saying, you know, I've got a severe problem. I'm sure you guys get complaints. I'd like to see the antlerless deer permits stay the same. Anybody have a comment on that in Iraq?
Can I ask Dax a question here?
Dax, on your antlerless deer permits in the region, could you explain where they are and why?
Yeah, I'll let Amy explain that.
So basically we have an increase in, or a new hunt for the Manila Pico Hunt, 50 antlerless permits. It's helped target depredation. Another component of it is our objective for the North Slope is 6,200 deer. Right now our estimate's at 8,300, so we're 2,000 over objective. And
under all in Manila. We should go 100.
We're just trying to increase the buck to doe ratio, you know, shoot the doors and the bucks. But no, it's kind of just, they're really concentrated in there. They come in there, they get hit really hard. The migratory deer come in there in the winter. And this is just to get the resident deer that aren't necessarily hunted by the public. It's kind of more of a private lands hunt. There is some public land, but it's really just to target the resident deer. And they don't really contribute to the hunting population a lot. And being 2,000 over objective, 50 does isn't going to hurt it.
I guess I was just going to add one more thing. You know, we had a meeting today. We talked about depredation. And, you know, we have legal obligations to address issues when we have, you know, landowners that are experiencing crop damage from wildlife. And, you know, there's different ways to handle it. You know, you can call a special depredation hunt. Sometimes we do division removal where agency folks will go and remove deer. In my mind, the best option is when we can call a proclamation hunt like this and give the opportunity to some sportsmen that want to go and harvest some deer and get some meat. But the situation we're in there in Manila, we've got a lot of deer that are, you know, close to town and right in agricultural areas. We need to thin some of those deer. The dates on the season for this hunt are earlier, so we're targeting the resident deer that are doing the damage during the growing season and not our migratory deer that are the deer that, you know, our public are hunting typically, mostly. So, you know, that's why we do it this way versus, you know, calling a special depredation hunt or doing division removal. And we'd rather let sportsmen take some of these deer and help us address some of these issues we have with landowners.
Is this the only?
That's our only goal.
The only doe hunt, okay, in the region. Okay. Mr. Chairman, Rob, just to make a point. You probably won't see the livestock and the agriculture people at this meeting. If they're coming to this meeting, they're behind me. They're going to the biologists and the fishing games prior to this meeting. So you probably won't see those people, but they do. These guys do. My point is, you won't easily see many people at this meeting.
So you're saying there is a problem, and you feel that we need to increase the handless deer permits?
I was just making a comment on your comment that you wasn't seeing any agriculture people here.
Right.
Which, my comment is, you probably wouldn't see them.
Right.
I've already went to the fishing game, and Morgan Caldwell, you know, and things have been worked out.
I think they have a rack over here, all sorts from Ramsey's. He'll tell you what he's thinking.
Okay, any other questions about a rack? Any comments and discussion?
Why the additional 75 of pay, which just, is it?
Yeah, it's that, you know, we've monitored that range down there for quite a while, and there's a lot of use on it. We're feeding a lot of deer on that, and it's, again, good opportunity to get some harvest down there. We've done some transplants for 7 years in a row down there, and just feel like we can do a little bit more.
Is it landowner issues also down there? Is there
the bulk of that is range driven. I mean, that winter range is, you know, kind of to build on what Dax and Amy were saying. We want healthy, robust populations of deer in the state, but we don't want to grow them on the backs of private landowners. And we don't want to grow them at the extent of our habitat. So if we're seeing the damage, if we're working with landowners and they're saying there's more than we can tolerate, we want to be proactive and work with them on those situations, which is what this list represents. So.
Call for motion. A motion.
I'm going to make a motion to approve this plan as presented.
I'll second.
Jason. The motion, Beth seconded. Then Jeremy seconded.
Jerry third.
Jerry third. All in favor? Unanimous. Unanimous.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Scott McFarland. CWMU analyst permit recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Scott McFarland. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the Division. And this evening I will be presenting the 2015 CWMU Antlerless Voucher and Permit Review Recommendations. Try not to trip. Okay, just kind of as a review of what we've got statewide here. We have 127 CWMUs. That represents. Let me try it. I'll bend over here. Currently, we have 127 CWMUs statewide. That represents over 2.2 million acres of property in our state that's enrolled in the CWMU program. Of those 127 CWMUs, 70 of those have antlerless permits that are being requested for them. 15 of those CWMUs have already been previously approved. They're on 3-year management plans. So last year was a big year for a renewal of these plans. So 15 of those were previously approved. But those 15, two of those are requesting changes to their previously approved numbers. And 55 CWMUs require Wildlife Board approval for new 3-year CORs. Last fall in our November RACs and December board meeting, all their bucks and bull numbers were approved for their 3-year plans. And in this spring meeting, we're approving the seeking approval on the analyst numbers. So in summary, of the 70 CWMUs that are requesting permits, there's 319 of those would go to the private sector, the CWMU, and 1,250 would go to the public through our public draw for a total of 1,569 permits of all species, deer, elk, moose, and pronghorn. The way that the permits are allocated is determined during their buck and bull process. If they choose a split on their bucks and bulls for deer and elk, a 90-10 private-public split, 100% of all the...
Scott, yes. One second. We need to ask that any conversations outside the room cease, that we can hear inside the room. So if there's those out in the hall can hear me. Thank you.
It's just
people in the camera, people in the room. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Go ahead, Scott.
I'm going to start over. No.
No.
Just talk louder.
I'm just trying to get this up so I don't have to bend over. Anyways, if they choose a 90-10 private-public buck-bull split, 100% of the permits go to the CWMU, to the public. 100% of the permits are allocated to them. If they choose, for example, an 85-15 private-public buck or bull split, 25% would go to the CWMU and 75% would go to the public, and so on. Did I do that? And so on, 80-20 would be a 40-60. Pronghorn and moose are always 60-40, split on private-public split on their bucks and bulls. And the antlerless is always a 40-60 private public sports map. So that's the way they're allocated to the CWMUs. So I'm going to go through the recommendations by region. Can you still hear me? I'll go through the recommendations by region. I'm not going to read all these, but I'll kind of highlight some of the changes that we need to. This is the northern region. The majority of these were renewal permits. Their approval of permits for a new three-year COR or a new three-year plan that they have. Junction Valley is in Box Elder County. They've already had an approved plan. They're requesting a change from 10 two-dole permits to go to 7 two-dole permits, so a total of 14 permits would go to that. Those are all public permits. And on the right-hand side, I have approve on there, but approved means it's just the division and the CWMU are in agreement with the recommendation on numbers. The way we do this is the biologists sit down with the CWMUs and jointly recommend numbers. If there's any disagreement, it would come in as a split recommendation. So this is the northern region continued. These are all new or renewal ones. It was a big year last fall. The southeastern region, these are all new or renewals, with the exception of JB Ranch, requested a change in their currently approved numbers. They requested an increase of 5 antlerless elk permits, so they would go to a 14 private permits and 21 public permits. And again, we're in agreement with these numbers. Southeastern region continued. Southern region, these were all renewals. These are the corresponding requested numbers. We're in agreement with these also. The central region, these are all news and renewals again. Last but not least, the northeast region. There's 2 renewals and 1 new one. Actually, the Sand Creek, I believe, was split off from a current CWMU. That's why it fell into the new category, but these are the requested numbers. So as an overview, we've got 7 two-dole permits. These are in the Junction Valley, and 5 single doe permits in the southern region in the Mount Carmel CWMU. All those are public permits. With elk, we'd have 255 antlerless elk permits would be going to the CWMUs, and 1,125 would go to the public through the draw in on the antlerless elk permit. So in the bottom 164 would go to the private to the CWMU, and 106 would go to the public. So a total of 319 private permits and 1,250 public permits. And what this represents is the public is receiving 79.7% of all the antlerless permits that are issued to the CWMUs. And with that, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Any questions by the RAC? Questions by the public? We have one comment by John Larson.
Thanks for your presentation, Scott. John Larson with SFW. We accept the visitation's plan as presented. Thanks.
Thanks. Okay, questions and discussions by the RAC? Comments? Move for a motion.
I motion we accept the presentation.
I second.
Motion.
And David.
David seconds. Okay, all in favor? Unanimous. Thank you. Let's go to the Mountain Goat Unit now. Lands, Dustin Schwab.
Shively.
Sorry, I didn't mean to tear that up.
So I'll tell you, this car can shoot a shotgun, so be careful. But I've never seen anybody shoot like you.
My name is Dustin Shively. I'm the Mountain Goat and Bighorn Sheep Biologist for the state, and I'll be presenting the Mountain Goat Unit Management Plan updates. The reason we're here is the 2013 to 2018 statewide management plan requires us to develop and revise all of our current unit management plans, and so I'll be presenting the recommended management direction for those units. And I will start off by going over a statewide habitat modeling effort, and then go over the unit plan format, and then an overview and changes from previous plans. So the habitat model that we used to predict habitat was a methodology developed by Gross et al. In 2002, where they found if you put a 258-meter buffer around a 30-degree slope or steeper, that would correctly classify about 87% of mountain goat use. And since goats are more associated with the steep cliff terrain than they are elevation, there was no elevational component on this model. And so we ran it at various levels at 8, 9, and 10,000 feet just to determine the amount of habitat available at that or at those elevations. What we found is that most of our populations modeled best either using 8 or 9,000 feet, but we do have populations that go down as low as 6,000 feet. Anyway, so we generated these acreages and used those to influence our population objective. Our goal was to keep our population objectives at 6 goats per square mile or less. So here's a map of statewide habitat model for goat habitat at 10,000 feet and above, 9,000 feet, 8,000 feet. So you see as you go lower, the more habitat you get. Here's all the habitat with our current goat units that are hunted in the state. If you remember, in August of 2013, under this current statewide plan, we were able to create 2 new goat units, and we passed the plans for Mount Denton and LaSalle. So those unit plans have already been approved, and so we won't be talking about those. We'll just be talking about the remainder tonight. So the unit plan format basically just starts with the boundary description and goes over land ownership that's inside goat habitat. And then goes over the history and current status and then issues and concerns specific for each unit. And then there's 3 main parts of the plan that guide our management recommendations in terms of population, habitat, and recreation. So there are 2 areas that we are recommending population objective changes. The first is on the Cache Ogden East Canyon area. This was formerly just the Willard Peak unit, but we've had a lot of mountain goats dispersing from this unit and establishing on adjacent mountain ranges, and so this management plan will allow us to manage those goats. And with that, we'd like to recommend going from 160 on just Willard Peak to 700 across the entire area. We'll be using 5 different subunits to make sure we keep our densities at 6 goats or less, again, 6 goats per square mile. The other area we'd like to recommend an increase on is the Tushers, which is in the southern part of the state. going from a population objective of 150 to 175. This herd has been highly productive, and it's usually at or over objective, and we've seen little or no habitat damage, and so we work with the forest to get their support in that in this population increase. But we also included additional language there to increase our communication or coordination with the forest when we do transplants and nanny hunts. So summary of the changes, you can see the old plant objectives on this table, and the ones that are changed are highlighted in yellow. Again, the Cache Ogden East Canyon going from 160 just on Willard Peak to 700 is an increase of 540 and an increase of 25 in the Tushers. Would be a statewide increase of 565. Under our old management plans, we were managing for just over 3,100 goats, and under this proposal, we'd be at 3,700. Currently, the statewide goat population is about 1,800 to 2,000. Here's a map of the Cache Ogden East Canyon area. Again, highlighted in red is the Willard Peak unit. That's currently the only unit we have a management plan for in the area. Having goats leaving that area and establishing on these adjacent ranges, we set up population objectives for each one of these subunits. And so, again, it would be 160 on Willard, 75 on the Wellsville, 190 on Middle Cache, 200 on the remaining portion of the Ogden unit, and then 75 in East Canyon. Or, again, 700 across this area. This is a map of the Tushers, the other area we're recommending an increase, a little bit more contiguous habitat, and again, it's been a really productive herd we use for transplants a lot, and with the, even with this proposed population objective increase, it's still the lowest density in the state. You can see that on this table, the unit on the left, the model habitat model elevation that was used for every unit, and then on the far right-hand column is the density. And again, the Tushers is the lowest in the state at 1.13 goats per square mile. The highest areas in the state are along the Wasatch on the Box Elder unit, and then also on the Provo Peak, where goat densities are approach 4 goats per square mile. So the habitat section of each plan, all plans include language that are supportive of habitat improvement projects and regulated livestock grazing. Also supportive of coordination between us and the Forest Service on vegetation monitoring. We're currently using satellite radio telemetry on a few units, including LaSalle's, Dutton, Nebo, and proposed on Wasatch. We're using these colors to get a little bit better perspective on goat habitat preferences in Utah. And so hopefully the information that we get out of that telemetry study will help us guide future monitoring efforts with the forest. So the last part of the plan would include the recreational objectives. Each plan would be consistent with the statewide management plan, where our consumptive uses guide us to recommend any goat permits to harvest 5 to 15% of the counted population, using nanny hunts and transplants to regulate the overall population size, and then using subunits in multiple seasons to maximize hunter success and try to maintain success at least 90%. And then the non-consumptive portion, we'd look to install interpretive signs or kiosks and establish goat areas, and then continue to expand our watchable wildlife viewing events. These are very popular, goat viewing very popular throughout the state, where we have sometimes 300 or 500 people attending these events. So we'd look to continue to expand those. So in summary, there's 3 main sections to each plan: the population, habitat, and recreation. Recommending 2 changes to population objectives in Cache, Ogden, East Canyon, and the Tushers. And then, again, all plans will be supportive of habitat monitoring and improvement projects. And then finally, all plans will be consistent with the current statewide plan on recreational objectives.
Thank you, Dustin. Any questions by the RAC for Dustin?
We've been fairly aggressive in the last 2 years on transplants. We've taken, can't quite remember, it's almost 80, something like that, here in the last couple of years. And we've knocked them back down into the population about 136, I think, is the current estimate, 150, something like that. So they have been over 200 on most years. So.
Any the east, I guess southeast from Ogden area and up through Morgan and Rickard and some of those other areas, how are they receptive to this idea?
All
that country higher than most of that private land?
We worked with the Forest Service to get their support on that, and largely it was because a lot of these goats have left Willard Peak and started to establish there, and there's currently no management plan for them. And so this would provide us an avenue to manage those goats that have established in those areas.
Okay. Any questions? Questions by the public? Comment here by the public. John Larson.
Thank you. Dustin, thanks. Again, I've watched this now four or five times, and I love it. In fact, on behalf of SFW, we accept your plan as presented. But in addition to that, I want to talk just for a minute about this, and I've shared this with Dustin now for four times, so his head might get a little big here. So if it does, it's all right. But I commend Dustin and the division on the aggressive increase there, because if you think about it, two perspectives here. From a sportsman's perspective, a goat's a once-in-a-lifetime draw that's actually attainable in this state. And so that just increases opportunity for all sportsmen, but also for those that use the backcountry in general, people that get out and mow to recreate. There's two species that are tough to see, and they're sheep and goats. And all of our resources are great, but you got to know where those critters are. And if you're good at finding them, you'll find them. But you take a group of Boy Scouts out and they see those goats, that's what they talk about. That's all they talk about. You take your family out on a backpack trip, or even your buddies on a general backcountry trip, and you see those things in the high country. It's just a fun thing to see. So I think it just elevates what we're doing as far as recreating in backcountry as well. It's a neat critter to see, and I think it's great.
Okay. Any comments or discussion by the RAC?
I'll make a motion that we go ahead and accept the proposal as it's been presented.
Dan's made a motion.
I'll second it.
David, the board. Yeah. Okay. Second it.
All in favor?
Unanimous.
Justin, okay. I got one question before you leave, though. This weekend on Saturday, there's a viewing on Little Conwood Canyon at the mouth of it. Are they going to travel from there, or actually can you see them from wherever you're going to park there?
Oh, can you see him right there?
Pretty much in the parking lots, right?
You can see him from right. I mean, that's where the viewing's going to happen. It's right there at the mouth of Little Cutler.
Yeah, it's right in the parking lot. They'll just be right up above him.
Cool. Glad you got a stage there.
Boyd's got some information in for us.
I need to come around front for this, though.
Every 4 or 8 years or whatever on this, we get to take an opportunity to thank folks for the efforts that they've put in on the RAC here. And it takes a lot of time, and these folks that are dedicated to doing this want you to know I really appreciate them. We're going to be losing a couple here, but they have one more meeting. can you bring me the bear? We have a picture here for Beth. Beth has put in 2 stints, so she's been with us for 8 years. She was here first here when I was still here first time, or was it the second time? But she was here, and she's finally reached her 8 years, and we want to tell her that we really appreciate her, and the state, the region, owes you a real debt of gratitude for the efforts that you've put in. And then we got another guy that was here just as I was leaving too. So that says how long he's been on this rack too, with Rod Morrison. And we want to express our gratitude and appreciation to Rod for all that he's done for the region. And many of the things that he said has done statewide. We had a question down here, well, why do we get to say things for other regions? Well, it's for statewide things, and you folks really have taken that, and I really appreciate it. On behalf of the division and on behalf of our director, we thank you very much.
When I first started on the RAP, and I didn't have much gray hair either.
That's right, you didn't need those.
Been a pleasure working with you guys. You tell you have a passion for what you do. It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Bucks and Bulls forever in Utah.
Thank you very much.
He saved me a bear.
Yeah.
He saved me a bear. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make it.
David, Best second.
Thank you.